Welcome everyone to this episode of Speaking of Translation. I'm Eve Boudou.
And I'm Corinne McKay. Thanks for joining us.
So in this episode, we're going to be talking about the basics of implementing a direct client marketing plan. This is for translators who are new to the direct client market and might be wondering where to start.
And before we dive into the meat of this episode, a quick update from us. So I have a new ebook out. I'm calling it an ebook because it's short, but you can also buy a print version. And it's called Finding and Marketing to Translation Agencies. And as the title would suggest, it is a nuts and bolts guide to working successfully in the agency market. And I'd say it's geared toward new translators, but hopefully it's got something for everyone who works in the agency market. So that's available on Amazon. Just search for the title or for my name, or go to my website, thoughtsontranslation.com, and click the Books for Translators tab. And that's where you can buy a PDF edition as well, if you prefer that. And Eve, I think subsequent to her presentation at the most recent ATA conference, has gotten a lot of very positive feedback on her already published book, Maintaining Your Second Language, which you can also find on Amazon if you, like many of us, are constantly looking for ways to keep up your language skills. So now on to the meat of this episode, which is about marketing to direct clients. Eve, did you want to start by telling us about, I wondered what percentage of your work comes from direct clients and what types of direct clients do you work for, just so our listeners have a little context?
Sure, yeah. My breakdown of direct clients versus agency clients has fluctuated a little bit over the years. But right now, and I think it's pretty stable in this range, it's about 60% direct clients and 40% agencies. And yeah, I was saying it's fluctuated, but that's about where I am right now. And so for my direct client work, I do most of my work for them producing translations that are related to corporate communications and marketing. And in that case, it's translating materials. What I mean is that they use to be client-facing to their own clients, right? And so often the kind of marketing stuff I do is really internet-focused. So it could be website copy, promotional product information, like for various companies that sell their different products. And so I'll be translating all the product descriptions and different things, you know, kind of localizing that so they can sell it to an English-speaking market. Or it could be like social media campaigns. So I've done that quite frequently. They'll have like a whole campaign, set out, and then I'll be translating it into English for them. Mm-hmm. So it's all, you know, pretty much web-focused. And then I also work for direct clients who want editing services for English content that has been written by non-native English speakers. And this is usually this kind of niche is for business proposals that will be submitted to U.S.-based clients. And then I also work on various software-related projects, translating software or manuals from French into English. And lastly, for my direct client base, I also translate children's books, and I've worked for two publishing houses of different sizes. And so I wanted to also point out that my direct clients for all of these categories are located in both the U.S. and Europe, and mostly France, but some other French-speaking countries as well. And this isn't just to, talk about what I'm doing, but obviously, like Corinne said, it's kind of giving you the broader context that as we get further into talking, you know, you can think about what categories and also where your direct clients might be located.
Definitely.
So, Corinne, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background with that?
Great. I work for, I'd say, about 70% direct clients and 30% agencies. And I should say, too, actually, maybe you want to answer this as well, Eve. I've been freelancing for 15 years, and I don't know that I worked for barely any direct clients about the first 5 years that I freelanced, like maybe the odd individual here and there, but not many. So do you want to give those stats for you? Because for our listeners, that might be helpful as well in terms of context.
Well, actually, for me, it's a little bit different because I as everybody probably knows by now, if you've heard our podcast before, I also do freelance project management. And so that's what I was mentioning. For me, it fluctuates depending on what kind of projects I have for that. So sometimes, and in the beginning, let's see, when I first started out, probably like you're saying, but then there was a chunk of time when I'd say more like 90% was direct client work for me. So mm-hmm. it does fluctuate and depending on who I'm focusing on.
Gotcha. So the largest segment of my direct client base, and I should say too, when I talk about largest, I mean in terms of income volume,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
so not actual number of clients. So in terms of income, the largest segment of my direct client base is international development entities. So NGOs and development contractors, and like Eve said, those are both in the U.S. and in Europe. Switzerland is a real hotbed of international development activity, so I have a number of clients in Switzerland for that kind of work. I also translate nonfiction books for publishing houses and self-published authors. And then I have a wide range of clients in what you might call the corporate communications and content marketing category. So that would currently include anything from several universities in France where they have international programs that they teach and market in English. So I translate their applications and marketing materials and syllabi for their courses for their non-French-speaking students. That ranges to, I translate for a Swiss environmental foundation that I translate their blog and their social media presence, a luxury real estate company in New York that works with buyers from French-speaking West Africa, and I translate the real estate documentation. Plus, I think I do, which a lot of translators really dislike this sector of work, but I actually love it. I work a lot with individuals who need official documents, educational records, things like that translated. And those, I think, when we talk about direct clients, it's really important as well to expand your definition of what a direct client is, because I think a lot of people might not think of working for individuals as direct client work, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was going to give you one tip about the individual market, just make people pay in advance. Lots of people are phobic about working with individuals because they're afraid of not getting paid. And I think the whole key is you make people pay in advance. And once you have a system set up, that I think per hour is actually some of my highest paying work. Obviously, it's small projects and a lot of one-off things, but by the hour, it's probably some of my highest paying work. So I think it's worth a look for a lot of people.
And I want to say that at the beginning, I don't love working with direct individual people as Corinne does, but once in a while I do it. And the way I've learned from her actually over the years to price that is I price it for what it's worth to me to do. And then
exactly.
if people say no, I'm happy not to do it. And then also, like you said, if they don't want to pay up front, I just walk away because it's not, you know, it's not something that I love doing. And so, but it works out in that way. Like you said, most people say yes and it works fine.
Yeah. And I think another thing there is just remember that those kinds of projects are really not worth an agency's time. Like translating a one-page birth certificate does not really justify an agency's overhead. So I think you can charge a comparatively high rate for those things. And it still is a valuable service to people because it's not a type of project that really is a good fit for an agency.
Well, I think and what you're saying too is like, I charge, like you're saying, quite what I consider for me, you know, I charge per page for that and at a quite high rate,
too,
but actually they would charge even more if they went to an agency. And
exactly.
So you know, everybody's happy in the end.
Right, exactly. So I think the point with my direct client base is I like a lot of variety, and I think I translate for a fair number of what you might call non-traditional direct clients. So, Eve, before we dive into the marketing piece, how about you give us some considerations people should think about before they even start working with direct clients? So people starting from zero, what are some things that they might want to think about before they even dive into marketing?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Corinne. So I think it's really important to recognize consciously that the direct client market and the agency market are really two separate and distinct client bases, and they both require a distinct different skill sets to interact with them. So somebody might be great at both, but somebody might not be. So you kind of need to think about that. And so and I also did want to point out, kind of as a little aside here, I know that we're focusing on direct client base, and so, but since I mentioned agency marketing, I wanted to mention that, like Corinne said, you can always read her book on translation agencies for info on that if you want to kind of get more info before we cover that in a future episode. So, so back to direct clients. I think that the big picture point is, and you have to be comfortable with this, is that the buck stops with you, and that means that you're responsible for any and all interaction with that client, and there is no middleman, which can be a pro, or it can be a good thing, or it can be a bad thing, depending on, you know, your personality and your outlook. So, so that I want to clarify a little bit, that means that all aspects of that relationship, meaning from marketing to following up with the client after you've finished a project, to getting final payment, to demanding payment if they, you know, are not paying you or whatever, all that type of thing, you're responsible for all of it. And so I think that we, you know, a lot of us know as independent professionals, we're kind of already responsible for doing it all, but this takes it one step further. So, so working with an agency, once you're on their roles as a vendor, whatever that takes, you know, just sending them an email or taking a test or whatever it takes, you know, often that means you'll receive an email or a call offering you a specific project. Great. So you can say yes or no to that project, and then you can focus on just translating or whatever specific task has been assigned to you, you know, make your delivery, and then you kind of wash your hands of it and you're on your way. But with direct clients, you'll be much more involved. So I, like, as I mentioned, you can't do any project work if there are no clients to give you projects. So your involvement begins much further upstream. So you actually need to market, then you need to sell your product directly to clients. And you don't have that agency safety net, where agencies already have this existing funnel of clients and projects to offer. And that, you know, if you fit the parameters for the particular project, then you kind of fall into it or whatever.
Right.
So then,
One thing I often say to people is, you know, think of any kind of question you would send to an agency project manager, and that's a question you're going to have to deal with when you work with direct clients. So,
exactly.
You know, anything, you go back to the project manager and say, you know, it looks like there's a page missing from the document, or do you want me to convert euros into dollars, and if so, at what rate? You know, what does this acronym mean when they talk about the HCLFS committee? What is that? Those are things you're going to have to deal with.
And it can also be things that you might not even touch on normally, like not just the middleman part, but it might be they're asking you for strategy. They're asking you for, help us kind of look at the bigger picture of our translation strategy or whatever. So it could just be, it could be project related, but it could be bigger than that too. So, I wanted to say, too, that you really need to be totally confident in your translation skills, and you need to be able to sell yourself and your skills in a convincing manner, and to also know and have that confidence that you're offering them a valuable service that they will pay and get their money's worth for. So you feel you have to be comfortable with that. There may be someone checking your work because you may set that up or whatever, but you need to be confident and feel that you actually have the translation skills to do this, you know, direct. So this also brings up another issue. If there's a problem with client satisfaction, how will you approach that? Can you provide editing and proofing, or would a third party reviewer, could you do that if issues arise where you needed to do that? So you'll be missing that, you know, bigger, like we said, bigger support structure of an agency behind you who might normally take care of this type of thing. So like I said before, I think this isn't either a pro or a con, but you need to be able to address these types of issues with direct clients and have something in place as a plan. So as I talked about, I kind of alluded to previously, you need to be willing to handle the non-translation aspects of each project and your overall business strategy. So this includes finding clients, doing your due diligence as to whether those are good clients in terms of fit and in terms of financial solvency, which is always really important. In terms of selling your services to them, including quoting and negotiating with them, following specific client instructions correctly. You don't have an agency to kind of parse that for you. Delivering the projects, invoicing the direct clients, following up on late payments as required. And this might be a little bit different depending on the industry, depending on the country, than what you would do for an agency client. And lastly, I did want to mention the interacting with direct clients, being their main contact, like you mentioned, Corinne, being their main contact and provider does take a certain skill set with regards to interpersonal skills. And so you need to ask yourself if you feel comfortable interacting with people on that level. That will help you decide, do you want to work with clients directly or not? And do you have the confidence to do that and the personality to be able to do that? So, okay. So Corinne, for people who are totally new to the direct client market, what do you think they should do in terms of figuring out who they might like to work for and how to contact those people?
Yeah, that's a good point, because I think a lot of people who would like to work with direct clients sort of struggle because they think, you know, who needs me? you know, what? Where should I even look for clients to market to, let alone the marketing piece? And one thing I would say, which sounds a little counterintuitive, but I think it's true, is many people fail because they aim too high. They contact enormous pharmaceutical or software companies, for example, and think that those companies are going to be a good fit for a freelancer who's starting out in the direct client market. So I think you need to think small to start out with. If you are really at a loss as to what kinds of clients might need you, think of the kinds of clients you work for through agencies. Of course, not those exact clients, because that would violate your non-compete agreement with the agency, presumably, but those types of clients like them. I think that really good research tools, other than just general Google searches, are LinkedIn and Twitter, because you can follow your potential clients in a low-key way to get a sense of what they're doing and whether they might need you, as well as find a potential hook to use when you contact them. So, for example, even for myself to this day, when I'm doing some marketing and I see a client that I think would be a good fit for me, or they and I might be a good fit for each other, the first thing that I do is follow them on LinkedIn and or Twitter to get a sense of who they are and what's going on with them and where I might fit in a way that would be helpful. Or I think another easy option is to look for clients in your target industries who are doing translations right now, but the translations are poorly done. So you can find, you know, there's no shortage of examples on the web of clients who are trying to do translation right now, but they're not doing it right. They're obviously not using a professional, and that gives you a pretty easy hook to contact them and say, you know, congratulations on trying to do this, and as a professional translator, I feel like I can help you. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. And I think that the easiest beginner direct client marketing methods are warm emails and paper letters. So warm email are, if you've never heard of that concept, a marketing coach named Ed Gandia, we'll put a link in the show notes, his last name is Gandia, is sort of the warm email marketing guru. And if you read his ebook about warm email marketing, my testimonial in that book is not an affiliate deal. I wrote him some fan mail and he included it in the book, which was totally fine with me. But just so people know, that isn't an affiliate deal. So his concept of warm email marketing is that you send an email of around 125 words, establishing a connection between you and the potential client, even though you don't know each other. So you might say something to the potential client like, I noticed on your website that you do X and I help clients do X. So I might write an email and say, you know, I noticed on your website that you recently won a contract to do development work in Senegal. And I've been translating for development. I help development contractors who work in West Africa do excellent French to English translations of their development materials. You can tell I'm hesitating a little there. I should have rehearsed that. Because you want it to sound a little smoother than that. But the point being, you don't make a hard sales pitch. So I don't email them and say, you know, I'm a French to English translator and would like to sell you my services. I say something like, I notice that you work in the development sector in West Africa, and I help development contractors obtain high quality English translations of their French materials. Or you could say, I notice that you're trying to reach out to English speakers with a blog in English, which is great, but as a professional translator, I could help you bring your English materials up to the quality of your German materials or Spanish materials or Italian materials. Don't tell your life story in the warm email. Focus on what you can do for the client and make it low-key, not pushy, and make it personal, not spammy. So sort of the opposite of a, you know, dear sir or madam type letter, you write something that makes a connection. Or you could write a paper letter that is like a cover letter that you do for a traditional job and include your resume and business card. And even I did that probably, 6 or 7 years ago with international development entities. And it was actually quite successful. We got, 2 or 3 new clients out of 100 letters, which I think is a pretty decent success rate for clients who we weren't connected to start out with. So Eve, did you want to offer any tips about those two topics, how to figure out who to market to, and then what you think are some good beginner marketing methods?
Yeah, so one thing that you kind of talked about at the beginning made me think of when you were talking about kind of categorizing who you're going to contact. Mm-hmm. One thing that I've learned over the years, and it took me a while, was that really thinking of, like you said, people who can actually, who are, you know, big enough or small enough that they're interesting to you and that they need your services, but they can also pay you. And so for a lot of my project mm-hmm. management work, because those are usually multi-language projects, I realized that my sweet spot for clients is like mid-size companies. So companies mm-hmm. who are worth, like $1 million to $550 million or something like that, as opposed to, because mm-hmm. I have done things where I did big campaigns and then I realized, oh, in this industry, you know, the particular industry that I was focusing on at the time, they were all too small. And they really weren't ready. They were all kind of in the startup mode where they weren't ready to pay. They weren't ready to pay for this service. And
they didn't
so I
have
kind
the
of,
budget for what you do. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so I, but like you said, you know, an individual may have the budget for what you do. It depends on what you in particular are offering that may be a lot different from what I'm offering, even though we all do translation. And so I think, you know, for whatever our listeners are offering, you need to scope out, you know, think to yourself, well, what's the sweet spot for my, you know, the profile of my ideal client who could actually pay for the services and focus on that. So you want someone who can pay you, who needs your services and who has the budget to pay you. So, and I also, listening to your tips, I wanted to reiterate those thoughts and the idea that I think you do need to use various approaches simultaneously to get results. So you can't focus on, you know, obviously one thing and think, okay, this will all turn out. You know, you have to have your finger in lots of fires where then all these things kind of come together and work. So another example I had was, you can attend industry events, not translation industry events, but, you know, specific to the industry, say it's pharmaceutical or say it's legal or whatever, different things to meet people in the target client industries. Like you said, you can do cold or warm emails or cold calling, which is not my thing, but some people are into that. So, you know, if that works for you. Also, you want to make it so that people can find you. So one of my currently largest direct clients found me through LinkedIn. And so they looked at my profile and I guess they felt, you know, like I had no idea they existed, right? And they looked at my profile and felt like I matched what they needed. So you want to ask yourself, are you findable? Are you findable and do you have information mm-hmm. that would be helpful to direct clients on your LinkedIn profile? Does it speak to potential direct clients? Direct clients will also find you on your website. They can. So I think this is somewhat passive as a technique, but you definitely cannot depend on your website to just stick it out there and think, oh, the direct clients will come to me. I'll build it and they will come because they won't. But
right,
you definitely
right.
have to have But you do want to have that as a supplementary piece, you know, where people can go, where direct clients can go. So somebody may actually stumble across it, and we've had that experience too a few times. And then other potential clients that you come into contact with will go and look at it to make sure, you know, to confirm. All do, you know, I do that for any kind of vendor, nothing to do with translation, even just people who are going to be giving me services for my house or whatever. We all want to go and check out and make sure that they seem legitimate from their website. So you need to have that too. Make sure you're findable in all these different ways. So related to that, I think that many direct client relationships start through referrals, at least many of mine have. And so you want to ask yourself, are you referable? Do you have good relationships with your colleagues and your mm-hmm. business associates? You know, would they want to refer you? So think about that. Mm-hmm. And that, when I was taking notes for today's podcast, made me think of, I wanted to make sure to mention the book, Get Clients Now by C.J. Hayden.
Yeah.
And Corinne and I have both used this book program several times. So I would call it a program in book form that you can actually repeat as many times as you feel you need to rev up your direct client base. And she really talks about various approaches that you can take to get direct clients and talks about how, you know, you do need to have several fingers in the fire at the same time. But she helps you also focus on them and not be so overwhelmed so that you can make, you know, whichever approaches you pick be successful. And so what I wanted to say about that, too, is I liked the program, and sometimes it made me go outside my own comfort zone, but I think that's a good thing because it helped me to do things I wouldn't have done on my own for marketing and that were key to getting new clients. So I would recommend that book. We'll put that in the show notes, too, but it's Getting Clients Now by C.J. Hayden, H-A-Y-D-E-N. And another resource I wanted to mention, too, for people interested in marketing to direct clients is to look at the episodes in our colleague Tess Witte's podcast that address direct client marketing. She has lots of episodes, and so I'm sure you can listen to them all, but if you want to focus in on direct client marketing, she'll have that in her show notes, and you could listen to those. And so her podcast is called Marketing Tips for Translators, and she has various guests on who talk about different topics, including direct client marketing. So, Corinne, do you have any thoughts on how people can make use of professional associations in their target industries?
Yeah, definitely. So I think if you focus on a specific sector or industry for your direct client work, you should definitely join their professional association if it is possible. So sometimes it's not possible. Like, for example, you have to be a doctor or a medical student to join the American Medical Association. But as an example, I belong to the Society for International Development, which is open to anyone interested in the development sector. So I feel like the membership is not super expensive. It keeps my finger on the pulse of that sector, and it gives me ideas of clients to market to. And they have, you know, everything that translators associations have, conferences, webinars, a magazine, and I just feel like it's a good way to stay, you know, connected to the industries that you translate for. So Eve, to wrap up, how about you give us some pitfalls to be aware of for people who are new to the direct client market? What should they watch out for?
Okay. Yeah, I think it's really important to realize that marketing needs to be a part of your daily or at least your weekly process for your whole business. So you need to market consistently and just have that be part of your normal business process. So consistent marketing as opposed to doing it like, you know, not that I can say I do this always, but you should. I should, and we all should, doing it, you know, like in spurts, like, oh, I'm going to do it every 6 months. You really need to do it consistently. And if you do it consistently, actually, it's not as scary because then you can do, you know, I'm going to do 5 a week or I'm going to do 2 a week or 1 a day. And it's on a smaller scale. But if you actually consistently do that, think how many marketing contacts you'll have made, you know, in 1 month and 6 months and a year. So I think consistency is really important. Yeah. And it's also really important once you make those contacts, that you follow up, and you don't expect there to be work after the first contact. So the idea is to build relationships and let people know that you're there to help them solve different problems that they have that you can address. So if they remember that you exist, which they will do if you follow up, which they may not do, you know, if you don't follow up, they'll be more likely to contact you specifically when they need help or refer you on to others. Like if their contacts come to them and say, oh, I really need this translator for blah, 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 they'll say, oh, you know, so-and-so has been emailing me every whatever. You've been emailing them every quarter, and so they remember you, and so they will refer you.
So well, it kind of that's one different thing that's a big difference if you've never worked in the direct client market only with agencies, is that you really only get an agency to agency referral if someone you work with at an agency moves to a new agency, because agencies logically want to keep you for themselves, right?
Of course. That's a really good point. Yeah.
Whereas with direct clients, I mean, the thing is, just like any other profession, people who work in a certain profession know lots of other people who do that job. And for example, with my little micro niche translating for French universities, it was because a colleague who lives in Paris referred me to a friend of hers who works in the international affairs department at a French university. But then that person has in turn referred me to two other people who do her same job, but at other universities in Paris that have English-speaking programs. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one thing to always be alert for, is that you need to operate a lot more like a sort of traditional business person in that way, and always be keeping in mind, like, am I referable by this person, or is this person potentially in a position to refer me to other clients? Because just like translators know lots of other translators, you know, mm-hmm. paralegals know lots of other paralegals, and people who work at, you know, contract research organizations know lots of other people who do that job.
Well, I think too, what you said made me realize, like, a lot of times with agencies, you know, even if it's a different person over the years, because I've had that happen, I'll forget that I sent information to a certain agency that was interesting to me, and they'll say, oh yeah, we already have your information, because I might have sent it to them 10 years ago, but they still have it. I mean, and maybe they've contacted me in the meantime, or maybe they haven't, but, you know, and they can actually pull that up and see it. But that's not, like you were saying, what we're talking about with direct clients is more like just regular people function. they're not going to have this big database likely that they're right. keeping information. It's just more interpersonal relationships. And mm-hmm. So you need to be in it for the long haul too, the marketing process. So you can't expect to send out 10 emails and get 10 new clients. You know, it's like, I don't know what the stats are, but they'll tell you, you know, it's like a 0.03 or something.
I usually think 1-2%. Like if you're really honestly cold contacting, you don't know the person at all, mm-hmm. then I think if you made 50 contacts and got one new client out of that, that would be pretty good.
That would be a good return rate. So yeah. So again, it's about the relationship and being available to people. Also, I think you have to think about your potential client's needs and pitch to them in a way that focuses on them. I know we all say that and it sounds corny, but it's true, because, for example, we don't want to write things to them that only translators care about. Like, that may be really important to you and in front of your mind. Like, I have all this, I don't know, specific translation software that this client has never heard of and is over, you know, kind of over their head or too jargony. And so you're super excited about it. Resist the temptation to share that kind of thing, because their eyes will glaze over and they don't care. And they want to know, you know, can you get the job done for them? And, you know, like, what will the results bring to them? Like, not all this nitty gritty about stuff that's nerd interesting to translator stuff. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so don't fall in that pitfall where you're thinking, where you may actually need, a lot of times you will need to explain that to an agency because they are looking for that information, but a direct client in a totally different field is not going to be interested in that. So you want to focus on why translation, you know, services can help them in a big picture way, and emphasize the benefits of working with you and how you can solve their problems. So unless you have something else to add, Corinne, I think that about wraps it up for today.
Yeah, I think that was perfect. Thank you.
So we hope that our listeners found these tips useful, and feel free to post a comment on our website, which is speakingoftranslation.com. And
definitely. And if you're listening to this via our website, just a reminder that you can subscribe to us on iTunes, or even leave us a review on iTunes if you enjoy the show. So one final reminder that my new ebook is Finding and Marketing to Translation Agencies, and Eve's book is Maintaining Your Second Language. And you can find both of those on Amazon, or we'll put a link in the show notes. Thanks, and we'll talk to you in our next
episode.
Everybody.